Hello, everybody. My name's Dean.
I'm Jake.
And we're going to struggle through this movie with you as well.
Yeah,
if you're watching.
Nice way of putting it.
Jake, you edited in 97, right?
Was it 97, 96, one of those way back, way back when.
Yeah, actually, originally, I thought it was 96, but when I looked at the original script, it actually said 97.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Which is works perfect because the whole recut thing has taken almost a year. So
all right.
We're kind of landing on the perfect 1 year or the...
15?
On the 15th anniversary coming May, June, July,
okay.
And... I think originally we edited in August of 97.
That's right. I remember it well.
Yep. Which was at your old place.
Yeah, we were in Scripps Ranch in San Diego.
Yep.
Little apartment right there by good old Filippi's Pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Don Lucio's Tacos.
Yep, they had the four roll tacos for like $5 or something.
Something like that.
Many meals of that. But that was probably two and a half weeks of solid work on that, I believe.
So we got a movie going on here? Is that what we're watching?
Yep, we're watching the new version.
Is this how it started? I guess this is how it used to start, right?
It originally started with the shots of Arnold Reggie in London.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And then this whole chase was much, much longer as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching this now, it's kind of like, okay, this whole Danny Poon character, played by Joe Murphy, who is being chased and then eventually killed, is kind of like one of those plot points that is because we had nobody else to really play the part.
Uh-huh.
And we should have just made him a cop rather than, quote, the son of the police commissioner the bomber's killing cops, right? So why is he chasing this guy?
Well, guilty by association, I think, is what we learned in the original cut. It was explained. So
I think that was here. So this whole opening thing is much shorter.
Yeah.
And, of course, the new opening titles.
That's
which
really sizzling.
Sizzling opening titles, right?
Uh-huh.
The original ones were great. I mean, they were very Bond-like, and I mean, what do you remember about?
I remember trying to do that with a very early version of Adobe Premiere, and I think it was probably the hardest that program was ever pushed at that point in time, especially with the home video camera footage, certainly.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that Adobe Premiere was being used for any professional work at that time. But we really pushed the boundaries of it with that opening sequence and really made it look like a Bond sequence.
Yeah, I mean, for back then, I think it turned out great. You know, like you said, and in fact, one thing I noticed while doing some of the other things in the recut here is the green screen stuff that we shot. I don't know how we did it back then, but it was very difficult. You wouldn't think it would be nowadays with After Effects and things like that, but trying to key out that background that is really horrible video.
Well, it was probably editor skills, you know? I mean, like you edited this one yourself, so it was probably harder than it would have been if I was doing this one. Oh, I like this. I like how you actually put in a shot of London. That sells it a little bit more.
Yeah, actually, I decided to throw in some more opening shots, I guess. And, or establishing shots, I guess.
Coverage, scenes.
Which we didn't have before, right?
No,
I just thought it sold it a little more.
It does. It makes it feel a little more grandiose.
Exactly.
How's the holiday treating you?
It's going all right. I'm a little bored. Vacation gibberish is tough.
We're glad you're not out here. It's been bloody awful out here the last few days.
I just received one of those.
This was shot at my parents' house in Seattle, and that is Mark Curtis playing Colby Fisher, who's Arnold Reggie's partner, who's about to get blown up.
I keep giving away these plot points here. What if somebody's watching this for the first time with this commentary? You're ruining it for him.
You're absolutely right. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, he gets killed. Just
JoJo does, right?
Sure. As far as you know.
In this scene, I kind of changed a bit too. I added in some stuff where Colby Fisher keeps talking, and JoJo's trying to tell him to listen, and he just doesn't listen. He just keeps talking. So I kind of cut it that way, hoping it'd be a little laugh. You want to talk about this?
Well, I noticed he suddenly had three hands. How did that happen? Somebody holding the phone? Am I giving away how you guys did it? Because, I mean, so it's just like CGI right here, or how did you guys do that?
I remember... Well, that's...
It looks like JoJo's hand, maybe.
JoJo's hand behind. But I remember you telling me a long time ago, you showed it to somebody, and they were looking at you like, wow, these guys are really dumb. They're like, it's obviously three hands there. And you're like, duh, that's the whole joke.
Yeah. So we reused our explosion over and over. It was a green screen of a helicopter blowing up.
Yes.
That for every time we needed an explosion, we would use that.
Over now, and over.
I noticed you got a much better explosion this time. What? How did you...
Well,
where did you come up with this one?
Just to clarify things, the previous explosion was like a green screen helicopter exploding from Independence Day. That's where I lifted
it. It was from a behind the scenes.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Behind the scenes. Yeah. So nowadays I have quite a library of like effect stuff, and there's just lots of explosions, which allows you to, you know, vary your explosions.
It's more designed for using in a something like this rather than us taking something that was meant for something completely different and reusing it over and over.
Which I think, like in the opening titles, in the old opening titles, I think we used that explosion numerous times. And if you look closely, you can actually see like the helicopter blades like coming apart or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
So this is Jose Gullin, who wound up playing Tech McDermott, who did a hilarious job. He's got this little dry heave thing that...
And a passion for donuts and cigars. I love that modern cell phone.
That's, you know, that's what people in Seattle were using, right?
Yeah, I remember my girlfriend in college had a phone like that, and she pulled it out in the movie theater one time, and I was like, what are you doing on the phone at the movie theater?
The thing weighs like 5 pounds. Yeah. I can't remember, but we had free access to it, and none of us actually had cell phones, so just used that and figured...
It's funny, as a joke. If you had your iPhone back then, you could probably have shot a better looking film, quality-wise.
I guarantee
more
of an
HD rather than, you know, 8mm videotape.
That's like one thing that just, you know, kills me going through and recutting this is the quality of some of these shots are like really, really bad.
I mean,
none of it's great, but there are others that, you know, because we weren't using lights or anything, you know, they just don't really hold up.
He carries an unopened can of soda in his pocket. Now how loony is that?
Most think he's unstoppable. A real super cop.
This shot
now
here.
Now, this was actually you driving.
No. You know, we went down to San Francisco.
Got a couple of scenes shot.
Had to lift that shot from Bullet.
Classic and Steve McQueen film.
Oh, yeah. Awesome film. In fact, there's a couple songs in here from the soundtrack. Lalo Schifrin songs that I thought would fit great. Now,
I love that.
You remember the crime scene well, right?
Oh, yeah.
How
it was much longer.
Yeah, I think it was 13 script pages. And mind you, the detonate script was in 10-point type, not 12-point. Uh-huh. So those 13 pages would probably end up being 15, 16. And, I mean, that's way too long for one scene, right?
Yeah.
And looking back, I think we could have done 3 different scenes to get all this information across.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that was the hardest thing to cut that up. You know, because as you remember, there's lots of lots of information.
Yeah.
Do you recognize the crime scene? A tape gag.
I recognize that. I noticed we got rid of the music from like Chips or whatever.
Yeah.
We pulled soundtracks from old TV shows for our transitions, and I noticed those are gone.
It was very crude and on the fly, I mean, we, you know, we had to, you know, do it quick. So
yeah.
A lot of the music was kind of laid in and
just whatever we could find.
Yeah. You know, that would work for a scene, but, the advantage of doing the recut is, you know, I could really edit.
It's not to listen to this guy.
Was that blood special effect? Did you just throw that on there?
A little blood splatter on the lens.
Okay, nice.
You know, to add
a little realism.
Realism, goriness, whatever. Which, you know, with the computers and stuff, it's very easily done. But, you know, I didn't want to go overboard.
I looked on the victim's hands. Must have been one of those short-fused M80s.
What else did you do to the shots themselves? Like, do I feel like there's kind of a vignette on it, or
yeah, there's... It's a...
Or a magic bullet look or something like that?
It's an overlay that I did that's, in this scene, shaded blue.
Okay.
You know, kind of like the cloudy city
feel.
And,
okay.
But then I was like, you know, I don't want to carry that through the whole movie.
Yep. Well, it makes sense just to, you know, for a scene on a scene by scene basis.
To try and change it.
Right.
And I didn't want to, you know, because the camera color is not that great. And I don't know. I just wanted to do something different,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah. Looks good.
So,
I mean, I noticed it. Most people probably won't notice. Of course, I had to point it out for those of you who did notice it. Now you see it, and it's probably all you're looking at.
Scratched in the dirt. Obviously, some kind of initial left by the perp. Some kind of calling card, if you will.
So who's that guy in the background?
That is James Gardner.
Oh, cameo?
Short. Everyone knows him as Jim Gardner, but everyone calls him James Gardner. No relation to Rockford Files.
I thought that too you were talking about.
He is someone Jerry and I worked with, and he decided to show up for a little cameo. Who ended up getting cut out.
Right, I remember he had some speaking parts in the original.
But he is in the deleted scene, so
okay.
You can see his little shot.
Yeah, with the original, we just pretty much put in everything that we had. If there was a scene with footage, we included it, and...
Yeah, I mean, we shot it word for word to the script, and we edited, right?
Sure.
Word for word to the script. So whatever's in the script... was on screen, and
that's what we put in.
Yeah,
we didn't.
And as you remember, like we didn't have a whole lot of time, right? So
we pretty much just included it all because it was there to include, and we didn't have time to decide if this was important or relevant or not.
Right,
so just made the cut.
And don't you agree, though? Which, by the way, the original cut was 1 hour and 40 minutes long, which was very long, but. If we had, say, another week than we did, we only had like 2.5 weeks, you know, back in 97.
Yep.
If we had an extra week, we probably would have gone back through and cut it down, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly.
We came down to that last day. We were still cutting the scenes, just trying to get the full thing edited.
Yeah.
But if we had more time, certainly we would have gone back through and tweaked it here and there.
And polished it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Which it's taken you 15 years to finally actually do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, procrastinate much, Dean?
Like I've told people, it's like we've never felt that this movie has been 100% complete. And now I kind of feel like once this is done, it will kind of feel like that way. And it's not just the cut of the film. It's just, you know, being able to put it on DVD and... You know, just all the modern coolness that's out there with the web stuff and YouTube and, you know, just being able to, you know, pimp this thing like it's something big.
So where do you think, where do you expect it to go from here or hope for it to go or imagine it going?
Well, if whoever's listening to this is hearing us right now, that means they somehow wound up with a copy of the movie. So... that means that my plan has worked, but I want to get it professionally done, you know, burned to DVD. I've got the DVD all ready to go, but I just need it printed and duplicated onto like 100 copies, which is not cheap, by the way.
Right.
I'm probably thinking of, you know, some kind of Kickstarter thing to try and raise money.
Yep.
So nobody has to pay for a copy of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also be able to mail it to them.
Right. That's a good idea.
I'd like to give it out for nothing.
What is Kickstart for those of us who don't know?
It is like a website to raise money for all kinds of, you know, different projects.
Kickstarter.com? Kickstart?
Yeah, Kickstarter.com, I think.
Yeah, so, I heard of it.
You know, that's the plan.
Never mind.
That's the plan, just because for 100 copies.
Yeah.
And at this point, I've got so much extra features. It's a dual layer DVD.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be for like 100 copies, like, you know, $300.
Mm.
And if you think you have to ship all 100 copies,
right,
that's like $3 a piece for, you know, so it adds up pretty quick. So we'll see. Maybe it'll just wind up on YouTube.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if it did.
So you better get used to it. You both are gonna bust this bomber.
It's a pleasure to be part of the team.
The only thing you're the part of is the problem. I don't know what makes you think you can float over here in your yellow submarine and take over. Let's get one thing straight. Jones, sit down and shut up.
I'm running the show. You got that?
As you both know, McDermott was killed this morning on a routine stakeout.
I feel like, I don't know if you've heard of the DV Rebel Filmmaker's Guide. It's this little book written by Stu Matskovitz, and he's like got all these kind of tips and tricks for shooting your own indie film. But you were doing a lot of the stuff long before this book was even published. And if this was on YouTube, I would love to just like put a little post that says, before the DV Rebel's Guide.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know,
ProLoss.com, there was Detonate, you know?
You know, we like to point out that, yes, this was 15 years ago. And, you know, shooting a movie on video, it's like not everybody was doing it. And that's why I always felt like there's no way we could have gotten, you know, Detonated completed without you, because, you know, you had the editing gear,
right,
and the editing know-how that, you know,
right,
you know, like, yeah, you know, everyone could, you know, get editing software.
Sure. You make it in your phone.
Yeah, exactly. So, we are kind of proud of the fact what we were able to pull off, you know, back then with an 8mm video camera. I mean,
and a computer that could only store like 45 minutes of hard drive or video footage.
Yeah, once you run through that real quick, our little
play-by-play. Okay, well, when we filmed this, or when Dean brought the tapes down, I just had like a home computer with, I guess it had like a large Barracuda hard drive. I don't remember how big at the time, but it was not gigabytes. I mean, I'm not sure if
it was
term
small.
Gigabyte was in our vocabulary at that point. But we could pretty much only edit 5-minute sections at a time. And so we would record, you know, probably, you know, half hour's worth of content and then edit together a 5-minute section. And then we would burn that off to a Panasonic M2 deck where it would sit and wait. Where we'd kept doing that scene by scene.
Basically in 5-minute chunks.
In 5-minute chunks, yeah. So we'd do a 5-minute chunk, record it to tape, erase the drive, and then recapture, redigitize the next, you know, 5-minute section and edit that. And so that obviously took a little while to do.
You know, but it's like thinking about it, doesn't it sound like,
sounds,
I don't
ridiculous
even want to do it anymore.
Yeah. But the fact that we were doing that way, since it had to like capture, and that allowed Dean the time while it was, you know, rendering, that, and it had to render too. It wasn't like real time. You couldn't just press play, you know, and have it play, especially with all the, you know, obvious special effects that we did to this. I mean, and color correction. Wait, we didn't do a whole lot of that. But it still had to render and export a file, and that took forever. And that afforded Dean the luxury of being able to prepare the next section. So he would get his tapes ready and for capturing and just kind of decide which sections of the footage, you know,
good takes
were going to be used. So it actually worked out pretty well, and there was not a lot of wasted time during the post-production.
No, very little sleep, if I remember. And, I mean, no joke, that's all we did for 2.5 weeks. I don't think there was one day that we didn't work on it.
Right. No, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't a vacation. Came down for a task, and I think I didn't do any other work. Like, I took off the time from my day job, and we just did this, you know?
And I think, I mean, because you were pointing it out earlier, if I remember, we were pretty, you know, polished and fancy with the earlier scenes as best we could, but after those first few, we realized we're not going to get this done in 2 weeks, so that's when we really started, you know, cutting corners and...
just zipping through it.
Yeah, I know you remember this. There's one part in the old cut in the crime scene where some music plays, and you know, it just captures the beginning of that first next song, thing or something. It's like, you know, those kinds of things. We knew it was there,
right?
But we didn't literally did not have the time to go back and even tinker with that. Right. So, but we did have time to do the ding, 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 ding in the crime scene.
Yeah, that's right. And just when we thought that it was done, we would cut back to him with a couple more pokes.
It's all part of the healing process. The rookie will do fine. You'll do fine, Detective Schmidt. Well, let's go.
Now, this little Acme thing is new.
That's great, yeah. It looks a little bit like it's higher quality.
And that was just a photograph, and the little Geo was a picture of a Geo that I just animated behind the cars to make it look like it actually drove in there.
Boy, this guy's got the life, doesn't he?
Yep. Kicking back at Acme with his Mad Dog 2020.
And slices of ham.
slices of ham.
Does not get much better than that.
With broken rubber gloves.
Yeah.
I don't remember what those were, but he just put those on. And we're just like, oh, it looks crazy to us. It sounds good. And reading Soldier of Fortune. Which,
right.
So, this, what I still remember about this scene is we were shooting this downtown. It was about 8:30 at night. And this was literally the same night and same time that you and Kevin flew into town.
Oh, really?
I still remember while we were shooting in here, I'm like, oh, they should be at the airport now. You guys were up there...
for a wedding.
Was it a wedding or were you shooting a conference?
I think we were there for a wedding.
Okay.
But I don't know. It might have been for a conference.
I don't remember either. But it was great because then it allowed you guys to have little cameos in there. And actually help us shoot some of the stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was for a conference. It was, it was real great for us to be part of the actual production, not just post. I mean, I knew that you would be eventually coming down to edit, but I had seen and worked on some of your other films in post-production, and to be a part of one, you know, just to actually be in it and work on it during the actual production was a lot of fun, and I was glad to have been able to do that.
Yeah,
Kevin too.
Just so everybody knows, at this point I was living in Seattle and Jake and Kevin lived in San Diego. So obviously that's a pretty large distance there. So with the last project, I think, you know, like this one, I just kind of flew down there for a short period of time and we just, cut it together. But I remember you guys flew in this night, so...
Yeah, the previous project we did not do. We didn't use a non-linear editor. We actually
it was
a Betacam, two decks, back and forth. So that was
like
a little
different. Decks, wasn't
four decks, yeah, something like that.
Now, man, you know, for those of you who don't know, the non-linear, you know, versus the old linear style. I mean, you literally were recording clips onto tape as you went. Now, if you made a mistake and you wanted to change a clip, right, you would have to...
You'd have to go back and redo everything from a certain point. You couldn't just take what you had edited, slip something else in, and slide everything else down, if that makes sense. It was... Yeah, if you wanted to go back and change something, you pretty much had to go back and redo everything.
It was brutal, and, you know, at the time, that was just the way it was done, but...
Yeah, I mean, it did make it to where you were more careful as you went along.
Right.
So you made sure you didn't make mistakes.
And, you know, sometimes we would record, or make a copy of everything forward if we did need to change that one clip and then just drop everything that... I mean, it was not an easy way to do it, especially when you look at the nonlinear, you know, computer way of editing now and how... I mean, you just can't even imagine.
Speaking of the computer way of doing everything now, I noticed that the establishing shot leading into this, there was rain and a slow zoom in.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
okay.
The cop cars in the foreground seemed to have a little bit of depth. Now, how do you do that with a still image? Because if you do a still image and just do like a Ken Burns effect on it...
It looks flat?
It looks flat, but it looked like the cars had a little different depth.
Oh, I'm glad you noticed that, Jake.
So how did you do that?
Well, actually, that's I will completely break it down for you. I had to do four different, including this FedEx one here. All of this is new, too, like all the passing cars and trucks, if you remember.
Yeah, already the FedEx. That's amazing. That's so really good.
But with establishing shots for the police station, it's basically a still photograph of a building, which I believe is a Microsoft campus building. Okay. And I, you know, put the Seattle police above the door. And then I found another photograph of some Seattle police cars that just so happened to be the same kind of perspective angle. Uh-huh. And I'm like, you know, this is perfect. So in After Effects, which you can kind of create like fake 3D is what I like to call it, mm-hmm. where you take 2D images and... You basically place them in front of your virtual camera or, like, you know, your viewpoint. And obviously you put the cop cars closer to you mm-hmm. and the building further back. I'm sure you know all this.
Yep,
I'm just explaining
for
the viewers here.
Yeah.
And then as you move the camera, because each object is on a different, you know, perspective plane or spot.
So it's like a virtual set, really.
Exactly, yeah. It's as if it was... real 3D, but just with 2D objects.
And, okay. And the rain? Where did the rain come from?
I just added that in After Effects.
Okay.
You know, just like a, you know, because...
rain effect.
It's Seattle.
Oh, right. Of course. Yes.
I realized that in this entire movie, there is no rain. And at this point, I think that show, The Killing, uh-huh. on AMC, I don't know if you ever saw it, but it's a great kind of murder mystery thriller show that was on AMC, and it takes place in Seattle, and they shot it in Seattle, and the entire show is all rain.
Okay.
Every shot is just rain, depressing rain. And I figured, wow, we shot this in Seattle and there's no rain.
When you do those pratfalls, are they completely the way you planned, or did that one, it looked like you started a trip, but then your feet slid out from underneath you?
Well, that...
And, or did that end up being a bigger fall than you expected it to be, and it just worked out?
I almost broke my arm on that,
okay.
and elbow, shattered my elbow. And it's... We did probably 6 or 7 takes where I would come in and trip over the threshold of the door, and there was a cup of coffee on the table that I tried to knock over.
Okay.
And, you know, every time it just wasn't working. It was too staged. So we thought, hey, let's mop down the floor with water.
Uh-huh.
It'll be slippery. So I walk in, do the trip, and I literally just, with these cowboy boots, slip right out from under me, and the first thing that hits is just my elbow and arm, and I totally thought I broke my arm, but it looks good.
Yeah.
And for the recut, I added in the gun shooting the display case.
Uh-huh. Right, I did see that.
I don't know
that.
If you remember, but we kind of started shooting that, but we never finished it. So I just used a frame grab of the display case that we just happened to pass by.
Okay.
You know, to add in that broken glass.
She said this guy, a Mr. Peterson, lives on our street. She said he stops by. Waits outside the coffee shop and receives...
Now, who did the camera work on this scene? Because it is phenomenal.
Well, it's funny you should say that. This is probably the best shot in the whole film. And that would be you, Jake.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. I remember now.
I don't know if you noticed either, too, if that's a word, either, too, that the sound is amazing as well.
What did we do for the sound?
Kevin.
Kevin is walking behind me
with the rusty
boom
pole.
Mic over. I see.
With
okay.
the rusty
oh, that's
pole
right.
mic.
Okay.
And
this is great. I like shots like this, and like in shows I'm watching today and movies, you know, it's like always very fluid, you know. It's always, I've always wanted to get a very fluid walking shot. It's not easy to do.
Which is why you should be proud of this shot, because
it's pretty good.
You are walking backwards.
This is not
handheld.
I am not wearing a Steadicam, folks.
No.
There's no jacket, you know.
In fact, somewhere in here, when we're under the awning of the bank, I believe you step on a cat. Remember that?
I do remember.
You backed into a cat. Yeah. And you shot this as well, I think.
Yeah, I must have. Yeah, I remember we stopped by there.
In fact, I think that previous scene on this at the Twin Teepees, rest in peace, and the following shot at when the car blows up, were you guys there for that?
I was not there for the car blowing up scene.
I'm mistaken. This we shot at the marina.
So now, having watched the behind the scenes, I have always, I'm curious about all this other stuff. Like, you talk about the long nights that you and JoJo spent, you know, coming up with ideas. Now, this particular scene, was this one of those ideas you came up in those long nights of you just kind of hanging out together? And, I mean, because just the dialogue here and the idea of where you can't understand what they're saying because they got food in their mouth. I mean, when did you guys make this up? Was this on the spot or originally part of the script? And the whole, you know, I think we got enough uncircumcised evidence. Like, when when did you make that? It's like little funny pieces like that. Like, I just wonder when and where inspiration struck for that kind of thing.
For this particular scene, which I do agree, I've always been kind of happy with the dialogue in this. And with, like a lot of movies, I'm sure, this one happened due to numerous writing and rewriting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just over time, it kind of, you know, you keep adding,
mm-hmm.
and it, you know, that's when it kind of becomes really great. And in fact, this is cut down.
Yeah.
You know, this scene was longer as well.
It was much longer.
But
it always made me want to go to Wendy's.
Yeah. I don't know how much Wendy's we bought, but we bought a lot. And I think by the time we came to the part where you can't understand us and we had to stuff our mouth, we were already so sick of Wendy's at that point.
Side of town. We have 20 minutes before this Peterson guy gets home.
Now, who came up with the uncircumcised evidence line?
I'd like to take full credit, but I honestly don't remember. I really don't, but...
I guess it's circumcised, not uncircumcised. We have enough circumcised
evidence. Yeah, circumcised evidence. Right. And the fact that, and this is why I think it might have been something I wrote in the Deacon Jones script,
mm-hmm.
is the thought process of that sounds like something stupid I would do.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't arrest somebody with circumstantial evidence.
Right.
Am I correct?
Correct.
So we have enough circumstantial evidence to bring them in?
Yep.
It doesn't make sense, right? It's right. It's kind of like a...
Right.
Now, the car exploding, that there was some documentary on explosives, and they decided they were going to put a pipe bomb in a car. And I saw this in like a commercial coming up, and I thought, oh my, here is a car blowing up from a pipe bomb,
mm-hmm.
not from a movie. Uh-huh. And I scrambled and, you know, set the VCR. That's a little machine that used to record onto tape.
Okay. I've seen them in museums. Yeah.
So, yeah, I recorded that, and it wound up being, you know, the perfect shot.
I like the muzzle flash and the smoke in this a lot better than our originals.
Yes.
I think this was when we first did it. It was our first attempt, I think, at trying to do the muzzle flash.
I think, if I remember, we were having a hard time because one frame was too quick and two was too long.
Yeah, something like that. And then I was trying to fade, dissolve out, which doesn't really make sense. It shouldn't be dissolving.
Yeah, I was just, like I said, we didn't really have time to even think about that too much.
Right.
So about this point in the movie, in the other movie, this would probably be about, you know, 50 minutes in.
Uh-huh.
We're only about, you know, 35 minutes. But at that point, I think we started just not putting muzzle flashes in. I mean,
yeah.
it was pretty, you know, bare bones. So yeah, with the recut, it was a lot of fun to add in muzzle flashes and the smoke, and I didn't go overboard and put the ejecting shells like maybe I should have, but you know, like I was saying earlier with the green screen, with the video quality, it's really hard to do like the special effects because
your effects look good.
Yeah,
on top of the video that does not look so good.
Right, you have to make your effect on top look as bad as old crappy 8mm video, and it's like,
yeah,
it just never looked right.
Did you do that mostly in Final Cut Pro, or did you have to do After Effects for a lot of that?
For the muzzle flashes and smoke?
Yeah.
I just wound up doing that in Final Cut.
Okay.
You know,
just another layer on top of a...
Yeah, and, you know, alpha layer thing. Going on and with the smoke was like an overlay. It was just easier to do in Final Cut, you know, for this, I guess. I know that sounds horrible, but there were a lot of things where I'm like, it's detonate. I mean, you know, how much are you going to put into it at this point? Knock it off. Now this shot of Christy opening the door, the shot of her opening the door and JoJo on the beach at the end, that was on like a random tape that I had that we shot last minute. That tape is gone. I have all the tapes except for that one tape with that shot and that shot. So I had to use the shot of her from an old VHS copy, which is why it just looks...
It didn't look that bad. Yeah, I mean...
And here we have Jerry Sewell's as Ron Peterson. The
actual person that they're looking for.
That's right. Not the mistaken. I don't know if you noticed, when we were coming out of the bushes there, we were limping. And the reason why we were limping is because in the original script, the person who answered the door was going to be a big muscle, like a biker.
Oh.
And he was going to beat us up in the front yard.
Okay.
And we shot... us coming out before we wound up knowing we couldn't get the guy. So
okay.
Arnold, get him!
That is new.
Yeah,
I think I added in that little extra.
I remember that from the original cut.
In fact, I think the, you know, kind of, you know, defeated look down was just, you know, after the cut.
Right.
You know, it was just kind of like, you know, I'm done. But I thought it played well as a, you know, just kind of defeated. You know, Thunderfoot.
Shucks. That was a cool shot, the close-up feet down on the ground.
Yeah.
Did you have
was running behind
just
Jerry,
holding the camera down?
Holding the camera really low.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's funny is when you watch the movie with the sound, you can hear my boots. Clogging along.
You still dressed as Thunderfoot Jones?
Yeah. So it's like Jerry's got these high heel boot sounds and he's wearing like tennis shoes.
That's good.
Now coming up here is the new enhanced version of the hand. That
right.
Get
your
tattoo joke?
I spent a little more time in After Effects trying to perfect because it was a little more difficult than...
It was real quick.
I mean, you remember, when we were trying to key that out...
Yeah, it took a little effort.
Essentially, it was Jerry's hand, and the night before, I had made a green circle of really bright green paper with toilet paper glued around the edge, and then I painted the toilet paper red, you know, to look like, you know...
Yep.
Flapped out flesh. And then JoJo poured on some red food coloring for the blood. But when we shot the hand coming up, the green was like the same color as the grass. You know, we should have done it blue instead of green. But and we were having problems keying that out. And then...
So we had to like use a mat or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I ran into the same problems. I mean, even with After Effects, it was a chore. And then there was no thickness to the hand. So I tried to add in some more gore and guts to give it a little more depth.
Right.
So originally,
Keeping it as a short shot this time, there's no time to really notice.
Right. I think you saw kind of like the first 45 minutes of the rough recut that I had done, and the hand wasn't in there.
Right.
I didn't put it in because I didn't want to deal with it, and it was kind of awkward, like it didn't fit.
Yep.
But I said,
found a way.
You know, we have to. Right?
Yeah. For sure. I was bummed when I didn't see it. And then you mentioned in the behind the scenes making of, you mentioned that it's a deleted scene.
Yeah.
So
that's,
it was a deleted and now re-added scene.
Re-added since I finished the making of.
Right. Okay. See, it's ever evolving, this whole process.
To mix the compound and deliver the stuff.
So my question would be is, when is the 3D version coming out?
people were asking, why don't you put it on Blu-ray? And I'm like, I would love the disc space because I'm already have too many things to squeeze on the DVD. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, look at this thing.
Yeah. What are you going to gain by making it Blu-ray?
I mean, yeah, the quality is already bad enough because everyone's TVs now are at least a 36-inch.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
Your kill-em-all antics.
I get results.
I know you remember this. Here we are, 40 minutes into the film, and we see Captain Willard again.
Mm-hmm.
In the original cut, Captain Willard was like an 8-minute scene at the beginning.
Right.
And when I was doing the recut, when I put the bomber at the beginning of the movie and then had JoJo show up after the credits, that's when I was kind of like, I don't have to do it exactly. I can rearrange things. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was like,
it kind of makes more sense. I mean, most like cop movies, there's more than one interaction with the sergeant or whatever,
It's right. He's always getting mad.
Yeah,
right.
He's got to progressively, get mad.
So
I don't remember that one.
I thought I'd try and cut him up, and it actually worked pretty well. I found spots where we could, when you're watching the old movie, if you remember the Willard scene, there's like three times where you're like, okay, that's the end of the scene.
Yeah,
we're back again.
And it keeps going.
And that's usually where we cut.
Right.
So that's what I did. I basically cut into three separate ones. So
it works.
I slipped them in every time they kind of do something really dumb. Like they're getting chewed out.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense.
You mentioned Bullet earlier. Here's one of the songs from Bullet that I just think is great from the soundtrack, so I threw it in there. Technically, it's not 70s. It's 1968, I believe, when Bullet came out. But all the other music is from the 70s, which is what the original was. It's just different soundtracks.
Right, okay.
We still have some Dirty Harry stuff, but all the tracks are different. Some stuff from The Enforcer. What's the other Dirty Harry movie? Magnum Force.
Sudden Impact.
And also a couple John Wayne movies, believe it or not. One called Brannigan and one called McHugh, which, oddly enough, they shot in Seattle in 1974. Oh. And I picked up that soundtrack because, I was on a huge, John Wayne kick at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, the soundtrack ended up having a lot of stuff that I ended up using here.
Well, is that what causes your episodes?
And if you do have time, you got to rewatch the movie with the alternate soundtrack because it's a completely different movie. It's like the big epic Hollywood kind of over dramatic
feel.
And much more contemporary and modern, whereas this is like the 70s. But it's always been that 70s flavor.
So it's just alternate music. Everything else, the cut and edit is all the same?
The cut and edit's the same.
Okay.
It's just in the audio options. You can watch it with this 70s score or with the new modern epic score. Or you can listen to the soundtracks just by themselves as well as an audio option because the soundtracks are pretty good on their own.
So this looks like your old neighborhood.
This is right outside of JoJo's mom's house.
Okay.
In Ballard. but, you know, kind of our home base, as we used to call it.
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of lived in the area, so we just shot everything around there. This is JoJo's niece. We talked her into doing this.
Has she seen the recut, or has she seen the final film?
I think she saw the final film. I think she saw it recently too. So, okay. You know, that was 15 years ago. Wow. So, you know, she's obviously old enough to realize that she probably regrets doing this after watching it. But
arrest that talk! Get out of here!
I'm hoping the recut will kind of breathe new life, or kind of just, you know, give it a new like flavor to it.
What is with all the shaving cream?
The thing I'm bummed is when I was going through the footage, we never had a close-up of me shaving with it, you know? And it's unfortunate because it's kind of difficult to see, but
I think the point is made.
It would have been, you know, comedy-wise to really get that close-up, especially at the end here where, you know, he realizes he's wrong.
Uh-huh. Northeast.
We're on 9th Avenue Northwest, you bloody fool!
And are you just holding the camera out the window for that? There's no special, like, car mount or anything?
Hand out the window. No, you know, nowadays you'd bust out the GoPro with the suction cup.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned earlier the whole iPhone thing, and it's like, I mean, we literally could have shot this with an iPhone because, you know, we didn't use any lights.
Mm-hmm.
Only, you know, a couple times, maybe indoors somewhere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's full HD on those phones. So,
yep.
I mean, it's...
I like all these sped up car shots. A little added smoke there.
That's good. You gotta make the joke out of the whole Geo Metro. Which was actually the sled I was rocking back in the days of my mini commutes in Seattle's, the 50 miles to a gallon car. But man, that thing was a tin can. And now that I look back on that old car, just nothing says Thunderfoot Jones like the Geo. Now, coming up here is the little, I wouldn't call it a car chase.
The tail, yeah.
Car tail, which...
Very close tail.
Inspired by Bullet, so why not this round use the song from Bullet that they use, you know, during that little tail. And it's the same car noise, if you remember, in the original cut.
Right.
We sampled the... the Shelby Mustang that McQueen used
For the Metro
sounds, and I wound up using those in this as well, just because I honestly couldn't find a better car sound than that.
I also like the warm tint you got going on with the color; kind of gives it a more of a '70s vibe.
Yeah, in fact, the opening shot of the bomber, it was the first thing I cut together, and I actually added grain into that. Originally thinking, I'm just going to grain the whole movie.
Just to give it all kind of an older
70s,
vintage,
you know,
look.
Like you're saying, the yellow and orange kind of. And I eventually, you know, took the grain out because the video was bad enough as it was.
Okay.
So adding stuff
grain
to make it worse.
To existing grain is not necessary.
That's just wonderful lighting on JoJo's face. I wonder.
Yes, we've talked about this in the commentary on the original. We talked about it in the behind the scenes. This is where I was filming, probably this when Kevin and I were visiting, and we saw that it was kind of dark in the car, and I noticed that there was a newsstand close by. So I just kind of angled it and jiggled it a little bit to where the sun reflected and bounced some light into the car there to help kind of lighten them up, so JoJo's face could be seen in the in the shadowy regions there.
I love that story, and I love telling people that because I think that sums up, like, really putting everything into making a movie, regardless of how good it is. Or, you know, it's like you figure out ways to do it because you don't have something,
mm-hmm.
like a reflector board or lights. It's like, yep. just make it work. You make do yeah. with what you got, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Now, this scene here, if you remember, originally, is a long conversation with the bomber.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I was having
some phone calls with dispatch and everything.
Yeah.
Where she told him, hey, the call is coming from inside the car.
Exactly.
That's all been cut, it looks like.
I wound up, you know, putting that in the deleted scenes, but I was really shooting for the 60-minute runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting kind of close to the end here. Excuse me. So I figured I'd kind of cut that back, which I did, and then it kind of stopped making sense, and then I started getting into having to key out that green screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we shot at green screen. I have no idea, but the green screen was outside. It was blowing around, as mm-hmm. I mentioned before. Bad quality video green screening.
Remember before, you did green screen it, and we ended up driving around in San Diego and just...
That's right, the background.
Yeah, to get the stuff to put in the green area. So it was just... So they're suddenly in Seattle, but the background are...
the background plates were in San Diego.
Suddenly eucalyptus trees in beautiful Scripps Ranch, San Diego.
And if I remember, in the original, I think one of the driving background shots is going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And we just left it in because we thought it was hilarious.
And suddenly the Snuggle Bear just showed up out of nowhere. It was really kind of random.
Well, I had a monster of a time, you know, trying to key that out. And it worked, but it didn't work well enough, mm-hmm. I guess. And I had spent a lot of time trying to get that just perfect. And like I said before, at a certain point, I'm kind of like, you know, enough is enough.
Now, what about this scene? I like how you've got the brick on the left, the cement on the right, and you've got this character who's kind of a duality.
Dual personality.
Was that a deliberate choice in filming, or did that just kind of happen and I'm noticing it?
It's deliberate in one way. And that's only because I remember seeing the building and the cement and brick was cool.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be cool visually
mm-hmm.
to frame it
like
on either side. It would look better, but there was no like psychological, like, oh, you know, he's got the dual personality one side. But I guess now, you know, we could say that.
Sure, Let's back up the tape and we'll re-record this where we say that we meant to do that.
Now, you've seen some of the little location piece that I did.
Yes.
So some of these locations are actually still here, believe it or not. This one hasn't changed much at all.
Now, is that another segment on the DVD? So when
when
you're done watching and listening to this commentary, you can go over to the location section. And
the locations then and now is what it's called. Now, this scene wasn't cut down too much. You know, because it wasn't that long to begin with. I think I kind of recut the fight a little. But, you know, having all the original tapes is kind of cool to have mm-hmm. alternate takes. Not that there's anything wrong with the original. You just have the chance to use a different take. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, you use it, I guess, just to change it up.
And now, plus, like you said, like we said before, when we cut it the first time through, we just did it quick without a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like this was an opportunity to come back and maybe use a take that might work a little bit better or even just to be different.
Yeah.
But you certainly had more time to make it how you wanted it to be.
Yeah, which was also hard to cut things out because since we were cutting to the script... We were also shooting it kind of as, you know, with the editing in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So as you would imagine, when you're cutting stuff, imagine cutting something out, and then when you close the gaps, you have two shots that don't work because mm-hmm. it was shot to have that shot right. in the middle. So right. that was the hard thing. Now, I thought about this the other day, and I find it kind of funny that it's not on purpose, but Mentos uh-huh. and Diet Coke,
yeah,
that whole explosion stuff that people do.
Right.
It's like, this was long before that. Had we had known, we could have turned, like, stuffed Mentos in his mouth and uh-huh. poured the Diet Coke.
Right.
And, or the Tab.
Uh-huh.
Quote, Diet Coke.
How did you do that effect? That wasn't, I mean, you had a can and then suddenly you had a can that was coming out of. What did you do? Poke it real quick and...
Had a can before we showed up on location with two holes.
Okay.
Located towards the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And we just filled it up and plugged the holes with my hand.
Okay. And now I notice there's a lot of more special effects going on here, like your whole transformation. That looked a lot better than our twirl of days gone by. That, I mean,
I wanted that to look like extra spectacular, and I think at the point I was really trying out some of the Andrew Kramer uh-huh. Stuff.
Okay. So right. From Video Copilot.
VideoCopilot.com or .org. I don't remember.
.net.
Anyways.
VideoCopilot.net maybe.
Oh, .net. And yeah, this guy's a genius, and he just has a lot of inspirational, you know, yeah, cool tutorials
to show you how to do professional effects just on your own.
Yeah, and so I wanted to try one of those. Who's this?
This guy needs to take some acting lessons, although, I mean, probably a lot of people in this film maybe need to take acting lessons. Oh,
that's a guaranteed, with the exception of JoJo, I think everyone...
I'm just more cracking up at the gel in my hair. My costume.
Well, late
90s. I didn't usually dress like that, folks. I was playing a character for the show.
Exactly.
I was trying to play a nerdy weirdo. I'm much cooler in real life.
Absolutely.
Or at least I pretend to be.
This actually worked out pretty good. This is Christy, who plays the cafe barista. This is her old car. That was a silver mid-size car, which happened to look very much like a Golf GTI,
which you had stock footage of an explosion for.
Exactly. So it worked out quite well. So when I was doing the recut, I was pretty happy that I was cutting this scene, and here we are winding up to almost an hour.
Yeah, very nice.
Only because the hour and 40 minutes was very long, and I just felt like if anyone is going to watch this, an hour would just seem like a nice round, short, concise number.
It's good for a movie that is like a homemade movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hour and a half, it gets to be a little long. And do you remember the airplane shots?
I do.
Interior airplane?
The interior of the airplane was actually Kevin's Gran Torino.
That's right.
So even though it looks like the cockpit of a plane, really it's a car from the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we purposely shot it with a lot of reflection, but man, it was not much you can do to see any clearer me in there. So I apologize on some of your sets if it's not too clear, but...
You know, doesn't Kyle look better today than he did back then?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
That's just because when he was playing the Captain Willard, you know, he really wanted to...
Do something?
I don't know where I'm going with that.
Now here's your other shot that you didn't have the original loss,
so you can definitely tell that it's looking like a bad VHS. But we literally shot that, you know, a few hours before I hopped on a plane to fly down to uh-huh. San Diego to edit. So that was that was very last minute on that. and the little chips, freeze frame, thumbs up.
Very nice.
You know, kind of the inspiration behind that.
I love these credits. Looks really good.
After doing the opening titles, I really wanted to do something cool at the end. Mm-hmm. So I figured at least with the main characters, you know, give them a little, you know, kind of screen time with this graphic heavy thing. And then when we go to the scrolling, do the same mm-hmm. thing. but
I noticed that Gary Coleman is not in the credits this time around.
Yeah, you know, I was going through the old credits when I was redoing these, and I had to laugh at like some of the old credits. It's like we were making up names basically because it was always JoJo and myself uh-huh. or Andrew or you and Kevin. I mean, it's like it got a little ridiculous seeing the names over and over, right. So we were making them up.
Right. But, I mean, if that's who really did the stuff, you know, surely that's okay.
And I remember not too long ago when episode one came out, I remember you and I were talking and you're like, the whole Jar Jar thing. JoJo's name in the old credits was Jar Jar.
Yeah, something. We coined the phrase Jar Jar long that's before right, George man. Lucas.
We should sue Lucas.
Yeah.
But...
Underwear provided by Victoria's Secret, huh?
There are a few in here that I did keep. But, you know, most of them...
There it is. Don Lucio's nice.
Yep. Always good. If you're ever in San Diego in the Mira Mesa area.
Yeah.
Don Lucio's very good. Now, coming up towards the end here, we have... the continuation of your character.
Oh, really?
I was going to put that
because I needed to go get car insurance before
that's right.
something happens to my car.
So I was going to try and incorporate it into the movie somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And I just decided in the end that where it was originally, which was at the end of the credits,
yep.
was still the best place to put it because it's kind of... you know, like the closure or whatever.
Right.
I don't know if you can hear it, but it is pouring rain here.
Yeah, suddenly
in San Diego. It's unbelievable.
It's appropriate for a film
shot in Seattle. That's right.
There was hardly any rain. Yeah. For it to be raining here in San Diego as we're wrapping up this commentary. Rust Bomb Media, that's new. That wasn't around when...
that's my new little...
It was just Caliber 7 Studios. Is Caliber 7 still... or is it just there because that's what you...
Caliber 7 isn't dead. It's just when JoJo and I do something together, I guess it would be Caliber 7. But sounds the whole good. Recut, I just...
Oh, here it is. Look at those white socks.
So hopefully people understand the whole insurance thing, but there it is. Hey, thanks for watching.
Yep.
It's been fun, man. 15 years.
You made it this far. You are a wonderful person.
That's right. God bless you.